Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. And interesting conversation now. I'm here with Bart, and Bart is going to talk about monetizing things. And one of the things that whenever I'm working with somebody, the first question is always, how are you going to monetize it? Business owners, entrepreneurs, they have all these amazing ideas. And the reality is, if you can't put the money where the product is, you can't go anywhere. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you've had a bit of an interesting life. Yeah.
I have. Yes.
What a blessing that is, sir. What a blessing that is.
It sure beats a boring life. That's for sure. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a fellow adrenaline junkie, or you were. I think you are, or you aren't, Rod.
I still am. Mm. I just do safer things nowadays. So
tell us what you've done in the past. You mentioned bungee jumping. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I took the first commercial bungee jump to Japan. I am a bungee jump master, at least in Japan.
Okay.
And that gave me the authority and the permission to push little Japanese people off the top of an 8-story bungee tower and assist them off the tower. And so I took that first commercial bungee jump over there. One of my stupid claims to fame is I jumped off the top of the tower just hanging on with my hands to the bungee cord.
That doesn't seem like a very good idea.
When I tell that story, and I call it brilliant or crazy. So brilliant, yeah, is your finger moving forward, crazy. And so at the bottom of my tower, we had a stuntman airbag. And in theory, one could jump from the top of the tower without a bungee cord, hit the mat, and be okay. And I walked to the edge without my cord, getting ready to jump. And I looked down and I said, I ain't that crazy. But my brilliant mind said, okay, we can attach a bungee cord. You jump with the bungee cord. When the bouncing stops, then all you got to do is unhook it and you can fall from 6 stories up instead of 8. And in my mind, I could do that. I jumped with the bungee cord, but I couldn't get it unhooked. And so my brilliant mind continues to think and it says, okay, we can take the connector, which is a little strap. It's a nylon strap about a foot long and has a carabiner on the end, and I could wrap it on itself and hook it to itself, put two of those at the bottom of the bungee cord, and I have two handles. And I could jump just hanging on, wait for the bouncing to stop, and then all I have to do is let go. And so I got my handles, and I went to the edge, and I was like, okay, I can do this. I jumped, I waited for the bouncing to stop, and then sometimes your brilliant mind doesn't go all the way to the end of the thinking because I am hanging from a giant rubber band. Uh-huh. What's going to happen when I let go? That rubber band shot to the top of the tower with this loud bang. I fell to the mat with a loud slap. It echoed throughout the park and everybody came running to see who just died. Anyway, if you're in business, if you're an entrepreneur, you got to have a little bit of crazy, brilliant, and a little bit of crazy.
You
And
know, I'm going to jump in there because I think you said something in that conversation which was really so formative, right? You are the jump master in Japan. And I think business owners, we get stuck on the being qualified, not on having the experience to do something, right? So many people that I talk to, I want to write a book, but I don't know how to write a book. I want to do this, but I don't know how to do that. I'm an astrologist, but I've not got any qualifications. And I keep on saying to them, you don't need the qualifications. You just need to know a little bit more than the next person in the room, right? And I've lived my life this way, right? My first real job, you can call it that. Well, not really, but my brother sent me his CV. And he said to me, look, you should try this IT stuff because IT is pretty cool. It's a 96, 97. It's now a booming thing. It's going to take off. You should get involved. And I'd only been on computers for 2 months at that stage. So I was like, yeah, I can figure this stuff out. Now, my brother's a very smart guy. He's a member of Mensa. He got, all the brains. I got all the good looks. So he sends me his CV. I'm in London. I've come from South Africa to London. And I Tippex out his name. Luckily, he's Ian and I'm Roy, so it was only three letters, so I could do it. And I printed my name onto it and got five or six copies done, so it didn't look printed. And I sent it out to 10 agents. And the first agent said to me, oh, okay. Yeah, he has an interview for you. And I went to the interview and I sat down with Peter McHugh, the owner of the company. He said, well, if you can go and do these three jobs for me, you can have the job. So now I'm in the interview, right? I'm like, oh shit, I wasn't expecting this at all. But you're in London. I think there's something like 8 million people there and thousands of companies. So I said, I'll just go and do it. So off I went to the first client. And I kind of go in. I say, hey, George. It was George from Merlin Biosciences. I said, well, what's the problem? And George says, well, this is the problem. And he shows me his computer, and it's like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. I said, George, can I just use your restroom, please? So off I go to his restroom, take my little Nokia, banana phone out. I'm like, Ian, what the hell do I do now? And Ian spoke me through it. And we went through, I don't know, 2.5 months of me visiting lots of restrooms. And at the same time, I was learning and learning and learning. And 2017, I bought that company. So, you have to have confidence that you can learn, I think, is the challenge.
Yeah, and Richard Branson has that famous quotation. If someone comes to you with a good opportunity and you don't know how to do it, say yes and figure it out. And before we hopped on here, I told you about when I was in Japan doing the bungee jump thing, I would go to the gym. And for the first couple of weeks, nobody talked to me because I'm this big gaijin, this big gringo in Japan, and they're afraid of me and don't know if I speak Japanese. And finally, this one guy comes up and he says, hello. And I said, hello. Then I started speaking Japanese to him, and he's like, "Poof, I'm glad you speak Japanese." But he was a big rig driver in Japan and wanted to stop driving and start importing camping trailers, Ford and Dodge diesel pickups into Japan from America. And he asked me if I would help. I didn't know how to do it, but I thought he did. I said yes. I thought he would teach me how. He didn't know how to do it, so we learned together. We still do that to this day. That was back in 97. And it's a very good side business of mine. I mean, I don't have a main business. I just, I'm the side hustle samurai. I side hustle whatever crosses my path, good, bad, or ugly. And it started because I said yes, just like you were saying. I didn't know how to do it, but we did it. I didn't have any
One of
qualifications.
my clients to this continue the story thread. One of my clients, David, he's an amazing musician. He was a teacher for many years and decided he wanted to get out and start his own company. And he came and worked for me for a while. And one of the things I always tell people is sell it before you build it, right? And this stuck with him. And he's a producer. He puts acts together. He does all the kind of stuff. And he teaches youngsters how to get into the music industry. And he had this opportunity come across his desk to do a Barry Manilow tribute act. So they sent this thing out and said, "Do you know anyone that can do this?" So he jumped onto ChatGPT, made a leaflet, sent it back, and said, "Yes, I can do it." This year so far, he launched. This was just over a year ago. This year so far, he's launched. I think he's done something like £400,000 turnover already. He's booked in theatres all around the world. They've asked him to perform in Vegas. They've asked him to perform on cruise ships. But it's just from, you know, having enough confidence in yourself and your skills and what you've learned to know that you can take that step. And yeah. I think that's something that entrepreneurs are the only breed of people that can go and do that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, with your brother as kind of a mentor, he was there to help you through things in the bathroom with you and your phone.
Yeah.
But when you start something that you don't know how to do, it's nice to have someone there to hold your hand, because you're going to have lots of people telling you the reasons why you can't do it. And a lot of them are going to be the closest to you, your friends, your family. "Oh, you can't do that." And it's nice to have someone there to hold your hand, to, "Hey, you can do this," and help you through it. Because you're going to have the naysayers, and, you know, like yours, your brother for you, just having that, and then you for your client, having someone to guide you along the path definitely helps, and helps give you the confidence.
Yeah. And now we go into a different world. We're in an entirely different world now, right? We're in a world where beforehand, you know, knowledge was expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now knowledge is $20 a month.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I'd
your
probably spend more
imagination,
than that.
Yeah. Your imagination is the only thing that stops you, right? And what do you make of this new AI world we're in?
I love it.
That's great, no?
I just last yesterday, I re so another business of mine is I'm a dog trainer, Top Dog dog training. And I needed to make, because of AEO, I needed to make some changes to my website to help ChatGPT and Claude recognize that, hey, this is the guy. And my web developer wanted, I think it was $1,500, not a big chunk of change, but he wanted a chunk of change. I redid my website yesterday because I didn't want to pay him $1,500. It cost me $25 in credits with Lovable to recreate my site, make it AEO and SEO friendly, and I did it myself.
Yep. Yep.
Knowledge used to be the bottleneck. Now it's not. It's there. It's out there. You just got to be willing to learn it and do it.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, as we go into this new space, that gap between people doing and people knowing what's possible is getting bigger and bigger. Right. Yeah. We think about what ChatGPT can do, what Codex can do, what Claude Code can do. We if you look at anything on social media, suddenly your whole feed gets flooded with these people saying, "Oh, I replaced a marketing team with these 7 prompts." Nothing irritates me more than that. Right. Yeah. Because there's a reality in the work that you have to put the work in. With all of this, you have to put the work in. Right. I've spent 3 years now deep in AI. Right. And I know, yeah, how badly wrong it can go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also know, if you're the architect, how well it can go.
Yeah. And it's just crazy what you can do. I took a picture of me from 1997. I told ChatGPT or Gemini, I can't remember which one, to put me on a stage behind a microphone. I wrote a country song in Suno about a past relationship. I went to another AI. I don't remember which one it was. I went to a video creation AI. I have me on stage from 1990, you know, me from 1997 on stage singing a country song I created in 2025.
Yeah.
The limits are limitless.
The same chap I was talking about, David. After I'd introduced him to ChatGPT, he had this idea, and being the producer, he sings, he plays multiple instruments, and he had this idea to ask ChatGPT, if AI was going to take over the world, how would it do it? Right. So he got really kind of engrossed in this, and he started working on this project. And 6 months later, he calls me up and says, "Roy, can you come to a private screening that I've got for people? Because you were instrumental in this, and I wasn't in the country at the stage, but and he wouldn't tell me what it was because he hadn't told anybody. So what he'd done is he'd gone to ChatGPT, he had worked out the script. And then he went on to Suno, he went on to the various things. And you know the War of the Worlds, they've made the album for it, right? Not the original, but the next one. And he'd made a AI apocalypse with this, right? He had sent to his family members, a request that they could go and record on Eleven's Labs, the small chunk of text. So they recorded this 2 minutes or 3 minutes onto Eleven's Labs, and he built this entire. It's on Spotify now. It's amazing. It's so good. AI Apocalypse. Look it up. And he literally went through this whole process and released this on Spotify. And this was the same guy that a year ago said, "Nah, AI is not going to go into music. It just can't get there." Right. And the imagination is now the only thing that holds us back. Right. And there's so much fear around it, and there's so much concern about it. I really love the idea to think about our freedoms, right? And think about the things we don't want to do. What are the things we do that make us human, right? If you wake up in the day and you've got, I don't know, 70% of the things you're doing aren't the things that you love, how can you automate those things to give you time to be more human, right? And if you've got 10 people that work for you, and you're not thinking about, "Oh, but if I get AI, I have to let them go," you're thinking about, "If I enable them to do what they love, can I do 10 times more or 100 times more?" And I think that's the reality that we step into if we want to.
So back to what you can create. I have two alter egos. One's name is Mason Kane, the other one's name is Dana Call, and they both have albums out on Spotify that deal with my thoughts, my feelings that I turned into a song using Claude, and me and Claude having a discussion and then putting it in Suno. And it's just you can it's amazing the things that you can do, just like your client was talking about. But as back to people and how AI is going to affect everything. So you familiar with Glenn Beck?
I'm not,
The
no.
so he is a talk show host here in America, fairly large size. He has created a, I think he's calling it George AI. And it's the founders of the United States that wrote the Constitution and everything. He's put all their writings into AI. So George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, all these guys. And they asked them about AI. And I remember George Washington said something about if, well, something that powerful, you need to have guardrails around it and government needs to be involved. And then, but what stuck out was what Benjamin Franklin said. And he says, "I think we're paying way more attention to the shadow that's being cast than the light that's being created
I
by."
love this.
And I just like a lot of people, they're like, "Oh, you can't do that. It's, but I like how he said, look at the light, look at what it's going to happen."
No, I love that. So tell us a bit about your book.
So my book is Monetize Your Mindset. It's not a what to do book. It is a how to think book. I mentioned that anything that crosses my path, good, bad, or ugly, I always ask, how can I monetize it? And I've done that ever since I we talked earlier about I've done that ever since I didn't make it into my dream job, which was to get in the FBI and chase serial killers. I just fell back on what my dad taught me by example. He never set me down and taught me the birds and the bees of business, but he showed me by example that because he had his hands in many different things. And I was devastated because I didn't want to go into what I studied in college. I didn't want to become an accountant and go count other people's money. I wanted to do something more. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I like to do things. And so as I'm going through life and doing this for myself, I was actually volunteering at a drug rehab center in Salt Lake City, teaching them how to speak and tell their stories. And I was listening to Jen tell her story, talking about how before she went to college, she didn't know that everybody else's life wasn't the same as hers. Because when her and her family were out and about, everything was somewhat normal. It wasn't until they got back home that the abuse and the neglect happened. And she thought that's what everybody went home to. And I'm sitting there in this and I'm thinking, that's the same way with the way people think about money. If you didn't grow up with my dad or someone like my dad, you don't think like I do. I need to help people think like I do. And so that's what the book is about, what it's for. I started writing it then. I was driving home from that night, and monetize your mindset came to mind. I'm like, surely someone has that. I went to GoDaddy when I got home, typed it in, monetizeyourmindset.com. It was available. I bought it. I didn't even know what I was going to do with it. I bought it. And so I started writing that book. This is before AI was helping everybody write books. It was very painful. I had a creative editor that we would butt heads all the time, just trying to make it the best it could be. And it gives examples of people who have taken what they like to do, what they need to do, what they're already doing, and turned that into a stream of income.
I love that concept of, what they like to do. Because what I see happening so often is the things that we like to do that we're good at, we devalue that in our own minds, right? So we're like, okay, I'm an astrologist. Well, I love astrology. I do all this astrology stuff. I'm not, my partner is. And we have this conversation. It's like, okay, well then go. Every time we go somewhere and someone says, okay, do me a reading. I'm like, why don't you charge him for it? Why don't you do something more with this? Why don't you, And she's, oh, I'm not qualified. I'm like, you're more qualified than most of the people I see on Facebook and on Instagram and on TikTok and the stuff that you do, you understand it at such a level. So I see people doing this so often, thinking that they need permission from somebody else, and devaluing themselves, right? That's the opposite of monetizing your mindset, right? That's not valuing yourself. I read Who Not How. Have you read that one?
I have not.
You should. Very good book. And it goes through this whole process of how do you value yourself, right? I sit and I do 1,000 hours on AI. And then I go and do a call with somebody. I change their life in an hour's time, and I charge them $200. How is that valuing myself, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you
And
work out your own value? And
people have a hard time with that. And it's my wife will kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of going like this. But so first of all, what do you like to do? What do you need to do? What are you already doing? Another thing people overlook is the things that they need to do. Not because they don't necessarily like it. And so I had to have my leg amputated in 2024. And when that happened, or actually when I found out it was going to happen, my twisted mind says, okay, I don't like this, but it's going to happen. There's nothing I can do about it. So how can I monetize it? 6 months post-op, I'm in an appointment with my prosthetist, and I conversation went like this. I said, Scott, I interviewed three other prosthetists before I decided on you. One of them had a guy that I could talk to that had his leg cut off. I could ask him, how bad is it going to hurt? How long until I get back on my feet? Or maybe I should say back on my foot because, only have one. And I said, Scott, you don't have a guy. I'm your guy. And I didn't want a job. I just wanted to be on retainer and go talk and help people through this process. It's something I needed to do for myself. In fact, I have to show you this. This is my leg. It says the Side Hustle Samurai has a samurai on it. It's tax deductible in the United States. But things you need to do is another thing that people overlook. A friend of mine's a grief counselor, not because she wanted to be, because she went through a lot of grief and she's helping people do what she went through. And so, people need to, like you say, value the stuff that they like to do, that they would do for free, that they probably already do for free. Value the stuff that they're doing because they need to do it. This is a life-changing experience for me. I joke that I used to go to bed and I would just brush my teeth and hop in bed. And I'm waiting for my wife to turn out the light because she's doing the creams and the stuff on her face to make her stay young. I didn't have a nightly routine. Now I have a nightly routine putting creams and stuff on my leg to make it stay good. And so it's just a life-changing experience. And the experiences that you go through that you can help other people through. A lot of these AI, something like that, AI can give you advice, but they can't. They haven't experienced it. This is something that AI can't take from me necessarily. But now I want to circle back to your wife and the astrology and stuff. Why did I lose my leg? I had booked, this is back in 2012, I booked a, it was a trip to a personal development retreat in the mountains in Canada. I'd booked it, I'd paid for it about a month before I was supposed to go. My wife comes out of her office and she says, "You can't go." I'm like, "I can't go where?" "You can't go to Canada. It's a bad direction." She's big into feng shui. And I can't live my life on your feng shui. She goes in her office. She comes back out a few minutes later. "No, it's a horrible direction. This could affect you for the rest of your life." Here we are. It's going to affect me for the rest of my life because I was dropped from a ropes course on the last day there, landed on my ankle, went to the doctor after I got back here to Utah. They x-rayed it, said it wasn't broken. I found out years later that it was actually my ankle bone was actually crushed on the back and the front. And they said, well, whenever it gets bad enough, when the pain gets bad enough, you're going to want to get it fused. And by the time the pain got bad enough, I'm a rough and tough cowboy from New Mexico. When the pain was bad enough, my ankle bone was gone. And the only option was amputation. But my wife told me, and there's been some other things that she has predicted per se. In 2010, she said in October, okay. After February, whatever date it was, 8th or something like that, when the Chinese New Year came in, we can't go to Japan because it's a bad direction. If I gotta go to Japan, I gotta go to Japan. Well, in what was it, March 11th, 2011, they had the earthquake, the tsunami, all that Fukushima, all that stuff, all that big thing. Then right before COVID, it was about the same time, 2019. She says, okay, after the first year, it's not going to be a good time to go to Japan. So I'm going to go to Japan right now. And so she got back February 3rd, right before they shut down the world because of COVID, because of her feng shui stuff. And I'm just like, I'm not like this. Everybody tells me, well, you should make her pay for that. She could do that. I says, yeah, well, If I'm renting out my wife for something, I think they have a word for that, and I don't think it's a very good word. But once again, someone who doesn't value what they have.
For sure. Yeah. So before we wrap up, if you're going to give people one piece of advice from all the lessons you've learned, what would that be?
So my dad, he taught me many things. And even in his death, I learned something great. And it's very important that everybody needs to hear. Have you heard the story Acres of Diamonds? You've heard
No.
that before? So it's an old story. There's actually a book called Acres of Diamonds, really small. It's about a Persian farmer who sold his farm and he went in search of diamonds. He died broke alone in a foreign land. He never found his riches. The new owner of the farm, however, was watering his camel in the brook that ran through the property and saw this strange rock. He reached down and picked it up. It was a diamond. The Golconda diamond mine was established right there on what was Ali Hafed's farm
Wow.
that he sold to someone else. My family, we have a similar story. Instead of acres of diamonds, we call it acres of pig poop. I grew up in a small town in southern New Mexico. We had more pigs than people in this town because of us. Dad was a pig farmer. At any one time on the farm, we had, I don't know, 15 to 19,000 pigs, 2,000 sows. You know what a sow is? A mama pig, for those who don't know. And a mama pig can give birth 2.5 times a year. And on our farm, we average 9.97 pigs per litter. So you mathematicians out there, you can do that math and you're going to figure out that that equals a lot of pig poop. We had these three man-made ponds that we would divert the stuff to, settling ponds. We called them the lagoons. So one year it goes here, next year here, next year here. Now, Dad, he shut down the pig operation in his mid-60s, decided to go search for his next big thing. He died at age 81 and never found his next big opportunity. 2 years after his death, we sold the farm for $235,000, which was a fair price for the property at the time. The new owners, about 6 months after that, they were leveling those man-made ponds. They had been dry on top for years, but the heavy grader was going across the middle of the pond and broke through the crust and sunk up to its belly in this black muck. They called in experts. Right there on the spot, the experts offered the new owners of our farm, or what was our farm, $2,000 a ton for the sh stuff. That's a
Can say
dollar
shit
a
to that
pound.
shit.
That's a dollar a pound for old pig poop. 500 plus tons of the stuff was acres of diamonds right under my dad's nose. So I want to ask your listeners, what about you? What are you overlooking? Or are you right there up on discovery? Don't be like Ali Afed and my dad and overlook the things that are right there within your grasp, right in your own backyard. They might even look like a pile of pig poop. So just don't overlook the stuff that's right there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I mean, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks
You too. Thank you.
for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.